This is a podcast from Consilio. We bring people together to create better places.
Hello and welcome to Better Places, a podcast from Consilio where we talk about all things planning, politics and development. In a departure from our usual format, we're going straight to our guest interview where our Managing Director Nick Dines talks to Simon Ricketts, partner at the law firm Town Legal and one of the country's top legal minds when it comes to planning law.
We are joined here today for the Consilio podcast by Simon Ricketts of Town Legal. Thank you very much for joining us, Simon.
Really good to be here, Nick.
So the Lawyer Hot 100 says Ricketts is the best man in town. That's quite the compliment. And you certainly have a high profile in relation to planning and development law. Certainly with your kind of LinkedIn profile and your blog, SimonICity.com.
Well, it's really flattering, Nick, when people say things like that. And you get a bit of imposter syndrome. I was at a drinks event last year and someone came up to me and found I was a planning lawyer and they said, you really need to read that Simonicity blog. Have you come across it? I'm like, yeah, I've read it a few times. But I do think it's just a product of being around a long time, liking talking to people, and above all, before I started boycotting it, I think Twitter was fantastic for me. So, it's nice when people say things like that, but there are loads of good planning lawyers around.
And 2016, Town Legal, part of the founding team of Town Legal, I believe. What made you decide to branch out, specialise in planning as such in 2016?
Yeah, well, I'd been at very large law firms for the whole of my career, and I'd always wanted to do something different and do the sort of thing that you're doing, Nick, yeah. And that I saw people like DP9 and Quad doing. And so the planets aligned when, I had a chat with Claire Fielding, who was at Gowling at the time. She'd been having chats with Patrick Robinson from Herbert Smith Freehills. And yeah, six of us came together and were the founding partners. Looking back, it seems pretty unbelievable that we set off with really nothing more than a business plan on the back of an envelope, no real experience of being let loose with anything real in terms of business. And 6 years later, it's great. Yeah, over 50 people, still just focusing on planning law, and it's working well.
Moving on to planning, the Conservative Party's Open Source Planning 2009 manifesto, which I'm sure was a much read document, started with this passage. The planning system is vital for a strong economy, for an attractive and sustainable environment, and for a successful economy. At present, the planning system in England achieves none of these goals. It is broken. And then we fast forward to 2020 with Boris Johnson in the Forward to Planning for the Future, again, another much read document. We approach the second decade of the 21st century. We're being artificially constrained by a relic from the middle of the 20th century, our outdated and ineffective planning system. So 11 years gap there, but seemingly nothing changed. Do you agree that England has an outdated and ineffective planning system?
I think that's an exaggeration. It certainly wasn't broken in 2009, 2010. I think it really is being stretched at the seams now. But when you look around at other areas, whether it's the health service, mm-hmm. whether it's most areas of government activity, nothing seems to be working that well. And I don't think the planning system is any different. And in some ways, it's always had a lower priority than many other areas. So, if we're starting to talk about planning reform, to my mind, the most important thing is just to make the system work more efficiently by better resourcing at all levels. But it's not just money and it's not just additional people. I think it's providing a bit more direction as to what those people should be focusing on, and really looking more towards outcomes than getting stuck in processes. Because, we all know that as soon as some new procedure gets introduced, somehow we'll turn it into a really big deal and a lot of paper, mm-hmm. and we need to pull things back a bit and focus on what really matters.
In the, well, we're going to touch upon the latest further reforms which have been announced this, well, not this week, but the latest reforms by the government. But in the short term, do you think it is a lack of planning money, essentially, that local authorities have to spend on their planning departments?
That is a really important part of it, because we all know from the applications we're dealing with, you know, there aren't enough experienced officers to deal with the applications, whether that's, you know, smaller, simpler applications or larger ones. So, yeah, experienced people, which means that more planners need to be coming into the profession at the bottom end. And then getting good experience. But as I say, I don't think it's just the people, because it's almost that the work expands to fill the time available, and you get more people, and suddenly we'll find even more people in meetings, even more complicated processes. Yeah. So I'm really keen on trying to find a way of encouraging active management of processes and focusing on, you know, what really matters.
Well, unfortunately, process doesn't generate headlines, does it? Which I think is why unlikely any government is really going to focus on actually getting the important issue of process sorted, which kind of takes us on to the announcements made in December by the government with respect to amendments to the Levelling Up and Regeneration Bill, and also consultation on reforms to the NPPF. And an awful lot's been said about this, which I won't talk about now, but in short, strengthening of greenbelt protection, watering down a five-year land supplies policies, which to me it looks like it's just made it easier for councils to block future development, and also take away the pressure on authorities to deliver housing numbers. As we've seen, at least according to Planning Resource today, 19 local plans have been delayed or withdrawn over the past 4 months. What do you think the government is actually seeking to achieve here with these reforms?
Well, this is in the domain of Consilio rather than planners or lawyers, because it's pure politics, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because the government still wants to deliver the Levelling Up and Regeneration Bill. I wonder whether really just to say that it's done something. It was being blocked by 50-odd... that's 50-odd rather than 50-odd Tory backbench MPs. The deal was that if amendments were brought forward to the NPPF, which watered down the use of the standard method for arriving at local housing need and the extent to which that had to be met in local plans, then they wouldn't stand in the way anymore of the Levelling Up Bill. So, you know, that's the thread that runs through that 22nd December set of announcements, that Michael Gove was delivering on what he presumably shook hands on with those backbenchers. Obviously, this is no way to develop a working planning system that delivers on what long-term we all want and need, which is adequate, decent housing, economic growth, combating climate change, mediating in a sensible way between competing uses for land, but politics is about short-term issues and election cycles rather than focusing on those long-term things. So who knows how we're going to tackle those long-term issues if we carry on like this.
Are you finding it harder than any time in your career to help deliver essentially what clients want, which is a successful implemented planning permission?
Totally, Nick. Sometimes I feel like I'm driven to try to defend this system, which is a rubbish position to be in when we're struggling to complete a Section 106 agreement within a sensible time for no good reason other than getting bogged down both in specific issues that often are reinventing the wheel or blockages within particular local authority departments. I do think all of that has got worse, and obviously the system has got much, much, much more complicated than when I started 35 years or so ago, because the planning system is this magical thing that the government thinks can be the way that you deliver so much, whether it's building safety or flooding, dealing with flood risk or dealing with climate change or making sure that schools are funded. Affordable housing comes forward with as little money from government as possible. You know, over time, the planning system has become the place that sort of does all of this without the government having to, you know, get its hands dirty.
Too many barnacles have been attached to the boat,
yeah,
and it's just bringing it down.
Totally.
And it's an interesting... It's an awful lot of regulation and planning, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe I'm being too negative in relation to all of this because you look around and great things still do get built.
Yes.
And there are great authorities, there are great planning officers and visionary leaders of authorities. It's just that too much of what we do just happens too slowly, and there's just sometimes a mindset that is too precautionary. Like, could there possibly be seen to be something which someone might complain about if we do this, rather than what is the right thing to do?
And it's whether government or politicians in general, local level as well, understand development. It always seems to me there's an actually lack of understanding about how development works, and actually the need for planning to assist and help people delivery.
Yeah.
People who, politicians almost seen as the enemy sometimes. The developers are the enemy. We all know rival stories in the past about development, but actually my experience of our clients is they actually want to deliver. Yes, they'll make a profit out of it, but they do want to deliver homes, and most of them are, the heart is actually in the right place, but politicians just don't seem to see that and want to put barriers in front of them, which is why when you go to places like Waltham Forest, in our experience, Barking and Dagenham and Brent, they really stand out because they want to work with the development community. Mm. But it just seems to me at a national level and local level, too many people want to kind of stop.
Yeah,
it's easy to say no, I guess. It's easy to say no.
Spot on. From the outside, what we do looks very simple, and there are heroes and there are villains. Mm-hmm. And the heroes are always those who are resisting development, protecting green space, protecting heritage, protecting what's there at the moment, and the villains are those who are trying to create something, and everyone outside of our area has very clear views on the wickedness of how developers get around providing affordable housing by playing a viability card, etc. But when you're in our area, it's very different. You see the real challenges which developers face, which you know, come out of the fundamental economics of development and the challenges of development. You know, who would invest capital at the moment in a speculative development if there is a safer or better return on your money elsewhere. So, I totally agree that people get the wrong end of the stick. But maybe we need to understand a bit more about what the pressures are on politicians as well.
You can also have the Liz Truss tax, I guess, to a reason why things have slowed down recently. But I noticed you said something did maybe come out of the short and illustrious leadership we had under Prime Minister Truss, and that was she appointed Chris Skidmore MP to carry out an independent review of net zero delivery by 2050 to actually help people get there in a pro-growth and pro-business manner. And upon reviewing the report, Mission Zero, independent review of net zero, you say the golden thread running through the report is the need for urgent reform of the planning system so as to make the path to decarbonisation smoother and faster. And it actually seems that's a can-do attitude with planning rather than a let's look to slow it down, which is quite refreshing.
Yeah, I assumed the worst when he was appointed because I thought that this was a step towards pushing back what we need to do to achieve net zero by 2050. But the report is just a very detailed, quite well-reasoned set of practical things which need to happen. And, you know, time and again, Chris Skidmore comes back to making sure that the planning system operates quicker and more effectively, particularly in relation to delivery of, you know, renewable energy schemes and decarbonisation. And it's totally right. And if you can achieve all of that to help with decarbonisation and combating climate change, let's do it to achieve decent, adequate housing for people. Let's do it to regenerate our cities. And I mean, maybe the disappointing thing was that that's happening in one area of the forest, and then in another area of the forest there's the draft revisions to the MPPF, and you just sort of hope that people are talking and doing this in a coordinated way. But
so if Michael Gove called you after having read SimonICity.com, nice plug for the blog, plug for the blog, and said, Simon, just two reforms you would suggest to me, because we always hear, and I think this is common for all of us, we all complain about what's wrong with planning as we see it. In fact, it seems to be hindering growth and development and delivering homes, which you'd hope a government would want to achieve. But practical, what reforms, are there any reforms from your experience that practically you think the government could quickly introduce?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is when you look back at the review of the planning appeals system that Bridget Rosewell did, where she recommended a series of uncontroversial changes to the way in which planning appeals were administered to really speed up the system, to target basically 6 months for getting through the appeal process for inquiries. Hasn't quite worked, and it was thrown sideways by COVID, but it's made a huge difference, and no one is saying that the system is less fair now or less robust. It's just through tightening deadlines, through dealing with validation quickly, and using more modern methods of, you know, having a case management conference over Teams at an early stage and just being more focused. And we need a Bridget Rosewell type review very quick of the planning application process from soup to nuts, as they say, to tighten it up and make sure that applications are processed in those statutory timescales. Because when a client asks, how long is it going to take for my application to be determined, you say, well, if it's a minor application, it should be 8 weeks, and if it's a larger one, it's 13 weeks or 16 weeks. And then you say, of course, it's probably going to take 6 months or a year, and it's crazy.
But going on, it's almost like a layman looking on. You know, I think it's 83% of all applications are met within 13 weeks, but clearly on larger applications, that is not the case. How is that guidance still publicly... It's almost a cynicism there, because it's, 13 weeks, but we're working together on one which has been over 2 years since committee, and still no sign section 106. So this 13 weeks seems a bit finger in the air to me.
I don't know where that statistic is, and I'm always wary that where they count it from and to, because does that... is if you agree to extend the determination period, whether it's 86% of ones that are within the extended period... yeah, but the maybe the problem with sort of the work we do, and those who are probably listening to the podcast, is we're dealing with the absolute tip of the iceberg. Yep. And maybe there's all these applications out there that are really going smoothly, and there's something wrong with us and our schemes.
just one final quick question in relation to planning is the government's proposal to tighten building regulations. Consultation document published on December the 23rd, which I think is an interesting date to release a consultation, in relation to fire safety, which suggests sprinklers in all new care homes, and also residential buildings above 30 metres to be designed and built with two staircases, with a short transition period, consultation ending in March, and developers urged to prepare for this change now. I mean, it feels like it's coming. But in London, the Mayor's office has taken the position it will not take schemes for stage two sign-off. where the proposals are for 18 metre plus high residential buildings. And it's just interesting, where does this fit in terms of building regulations, in terms of planning? It seems to be a mixture of methods being used to tackle, which is obviously clearly a problem we need to resolve, but it seems to be confusion out there rather than the clarity, and a number of schemes appear to be in limbo.
Yeah, well, it goes back to that thing about the planning system being looked to resolve things which really are for other legislation. So, you know, it's really for building regulations, mm-hmm. or fire safety legislation. But the government, in response to Grenfell, and, you know, there is a legitimate issue about the fact that buildings need to be designed safely from the outset, from when they're, you know, start their way through the planning system. So I can sort of see why it is relevant to planning. But there's been the London Fire Brigade and fire brigades elsewhere in the country have been saying that you need two staircases for buildings above 18 metres. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's in conflict with what the government is proposing in its building, in the building regulations, which would be 30 metres. So the GLA has been trying to work out what stance to take. And I think as of today, I was hearing that they are going for the 30-metre threshold. But there's been this period of stasis since Christmas when the GLA have been sort of refusing to take schemes through the Stage 2 process. And, you know, one of the evils of the planning system is where you get these abrupt shifts without any notice, without any transitional arrangements, without anything written down on paper. It's really difficult.
One building that you could look on, that you've worked on, and think, I'm proud to have worked on that development, or development or building. Is there one that stands out so far?
Yeah, whenever I see the London news and they show the skyline, and there's the London Eye, because I didn't work on the original temporary permission for the London Eye, but for the planning permission and process in about 2003, mm-hmm. where it secured long-term retention. And it was a long negotiation. Lots of people had their views. But looking at the skyline now and seeing the London Eye, that's something I'm certainly proud of.
Mm-hmm. Music is a passion in your life, as anyone who follows you on various social media channels. Not Twitter, though, I notice. We have a boycott of Twitter. That's probably a separate conversation on Twitter post Elon Musk there. Free records, Simon. Yeah. We'll do a bit of a desert island disc here. If you could take three records with you, what would they be?
They'd all go back to my youth. And they would be, this will mean nothing to most of your listeners, Another Girl, Another Planet by The Only Ones.
Mm-hmm.
Shot by Both Sides by Magazine. Both of those are about 1979, so prehistoric. And I suppose, although it's not the best song by The Clash, I Fought the Law and The Law Won seems to have resonance.
very much so. Train in Vain would be mine in Clash, but not quite.
Yes.
Not quite as topical with the name there. Well, Simon, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast. If we can get the licensing, we might try and get a few of those songs put in, but I don't think we'll be able to. But thank you very much for joining us today.
Lovely. Thanks very much, Nick.
That's all for this episode of Better Places. Don't forget to like, subscribe, leave a comment, and tune in for the next episode. Thanks for listening.
Bye.